Restaurant Unstoppable, episode 1075 with Fars Kargar.
To your point, don't ever wait for things to go on sale. Like, every one of the restaurant locations I've found was through a relationship.
Are you ready for it factors, success stories, failures, and bombs of restaurant industry knowledge? Then join Eric Cacciatore and today's incredible guest as they share what it takes to become unstoppable.
Imagine you had an employee who never called out, kept inventory in line, could spit out sales and cost data at a moment's notice, and saved you hours of work. You'd want to hire that person, right? Margin Edge is the boost in efficiency you need and doesn't add to your labor cost. Margin Edge is a complete restaurant management software that allows you to seamlessly manage all aspects of your business from one central location. With Margin Edge, you can track food costs in real time, make inventory faster and less tedious, easily cost out your recipes, and get a daily P&L so you always know where you stand. Visit marginedge.com/unstoppable to learn more and to get a free monthly restaurant sales report packed with exclusive industry trends, data, and insights. Once more, that's Margin Edge, marginedge.com/unstoppable. This episode brought to you by Owner.com. Owner.com is the leading all-in-one platform for restaurant marketing. Owner.com powers everything from SEO-optimized websites, direct online ordering, automated email and text marketing, built-in loyalty programs, zero-commission delivery, and branded mobile apps for your restaurant that's integrated right into your POS. With Owner.com, there's no contract, no hidden fees, and nothing to lose. Join thousands of restaurant owners using Owner.com to grow direct online sales, save thousands in third-party fees, and simplify their online ordering presence all in one. Book a free demo today at owner.com/unstoppable and see why owner.com is the number one rated restaurant marketing software. This podcast was made possible by Restaurant Systems Pro, and we need to let you know that every second and fourth Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, CEO of Restaurant Systems Pro, Fred Langley, will be going live, where he'll cover what you need to know about running a profitable restaurant from soup to nuts. This live event will reveal the steps to manage the service and financial goals for your restaurant's productivity. To learn more, head to go.restaurantsystemspro.com. pro.net/restaurantunstoppable. This episode made possible by Restaurant Technologies, Inc. RTI's Total Oil Management automates your entire cooking oil process. With Total Oil Management, you get dependable fresh bulk cooking oil delivery, filtration plus oil usage monitoring and reporting, easy oil disposal, use cooking oil pickup and recycling, and say goodbye to messy, dangerous restaurant rendering tanks. Yuck. RTI's end-to-end cooking oil system helps you manage your used cooking oil disposal, storage, collection, and recycling conveniently, safely, and cleanly with no upfront cost. Restaurant Technologies, Inc. is always on, so you don't have to be. To learn more, head to RTI-Inc.com and let them know Restaurant Unstoppable Podcast sent you their way. With excitement, allow me to introduce to you today's guest, owner at Del Bar Restaurant and Bar. I can call you a friend now, man. I'm correct. Excited to say that. Fars Kargar, my man Fars, are you feeling unstoppable today? I'm
feeling great today.
Dude, I'm super stoked for you. So it's a crazy thing. It's been almost a year and a half since we had you last on the show. You have since opened a fast casual, what do you call it, a fast casual version of Del Bar, or is it its own thing?
I would say fast casual version of Del Bar.
Okay. Yeah. And then you have a second Del Bar, which we're sitting in today. Holy cow, man. This place is beautiful.
Thank you.
Over 300 seats.
Yeah, around 320.
You got the patio too?
Yeah, so two patios.
Two patios.
Yeah.
And private room. Where are you after the patios with the seat counts?
No, is there I think it's around 360 with all the patios, if you count all the patios.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's wild. I feel like I'm getting the story before anybody else really gets there. We're coming back. We're following you as you scale. And I'm sure over the past year and a half, you have some amazing things. But dude, I was really excited about first. Like I listened to the interview this morning after the first time getting you on, and your story is just so inspirational. Coming from Iran and coming here, not knowing the language and
just continuing to show up and, you know, like struggling, like with trying to get certain jobs because of the language barrier, and just doing the work. And, you know, you're the American dream.
Thank you.
Tell me anybody else who's not the American dream doing
that.
That's true.
That's as close as you get to American dream.
I mean,
it's the start of it.
It's amazing. And now you're just a rocket ship, man. Yeah. I'm super excited for
Thank you.
So before we dive into what's happened over the last year and a half, we're really going to drill down today too, which makes me super excited. Let's get that motivational, inspirational ball rolling with a success quote or mantra. What do you got for us?
I'm going to go back to the same one that keeps moving every day. These two shall pass. Doesn't matter what's in front of you, what you're dealing with, you're going to get through it.
So what's passed over the past year?
A lot of past.
I can't wait. Actually, I'm sure there's tons of things that have passed. So when we last spoke to you, again, it was one Del Bar, the Fast Casual. You've since opened a second Del Bar. Well, you didn't even have the Fast Casual yet.
No. We were in the construction zone. I remember it. Like, I think you opened 2 months after we spoke.
Right. A big things that came up that were being echoed the first time we spoke for you were just consistency, relationships. And one of your challenges was removing yourself from the day-to-day, which is a big one for people. Because if you're going to scale, you have to put layers between you and the work.
Correct.
So where should we start talking, man? Take us to where it makes sense. Going back to, like, I guess the beginning of 2023.
So beginning of 2023, last time we spoke was 2022, right?
It was 2022. Right, I think it was November.
We opened November, end of that month.
Wow. So when we were actually sitting in that location.
Yeah.
That was episode 949. If you're listening to this and you want to go back and get a refresher, I recommend maybe doing that before. Or just search Fars Kargar. And I'm sure that, you know, Restaurant Unstoppable, you'll find that episode. How did that go? How was the opening?
It was good. It was a challenge. It was the first time ever doing the Fast Casual concept. It was all about speed, obviously, all about quality, all about smallest profit margins as it gets. So it's entirely different beast from what we were used to. It worked, and it runs greatly.
Nice. So your only other Fast Casual experience was the Waffle House.
Literally, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what were the challenges in the first few months of launching that? Like,
it was entirely different. So, like, when you join a company that already does Fast Casual, there's so many systems already in place that you're following up on. When you have to create your own from scratch, is just a whole other ball game. You're working off of 600 square foot of space, trying to do huge volumes, serving around 50 people, like, in a matter of an hour.
Right.
That space becomes such a big issue.
Now, you recruited the chef from your former restaurant to come with you to do Del Bar, correct?
No. So we had, the line cook deck actually came up, worked with me. He became the chef over time because he was very good.
Okay.
Then throughout we talked about this previously, throughout the lawsuits, we had to let him go.
That's why I remember.
And we went rogue.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
You remember that, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of, like, setting up a kitchen for Fast Casual and setting up a menu engineering, like, what were the curveballs that you weren't expecting?
Just like everybody else, I was shooting for the moon. Then I realized after a while, this is a tiny space. I can't have that many menu items. I have to go much smaller.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was a lot of things like that. It was like menu prices are too sensitive for guests. It's a little too high. We need to figure out a way to offer the menu items at lower prices, lower price points, smaller menu so we can actually make a profit out of the concept. You know, just get that food quality dialed in so the smaller it is, the better quality we can give out.
Do me a favor and kind of paint the picture of BB and what you offer there, like what the original vision was in terms of the offering and now what it is today and how it's transferring.
So original thing that the original vision of BB was quite a lot more menu items. It was supposed to work as more like a counter service. You come up to the counter, you see plated dishes that kind of reminds you of what you want to order. Because that cuisine is so difficult for some people to understand. It's an entirely different cuisine. Not everybody's used to it. Not everybody knows it. It's not like you're going to a burger joint or you're going to a steakhouse or you're going to a Mexican restaurant.
Everybody knows what a cheeseburger and fries
is. Correct, yeah. So you have to paint a picture for people. You want to stay authentic and offer and use the actual name of the dishes. But if you use the actual name of the dishes, it's going to work exact opposite to your advantage because nobody knows what they are.
Right.
So you have to figure out that line in between, like, I'm on a lunch break for 30 minutes.
Right. You don't want to have anxiety.
How am I going to get in and out?
Hungry.
Correct. Yeah. So original idea was to have a display of all the food every day. So you see what you're ordering. You go up to the counter. You're like, oh, I want one of these or two of that. And you get a drink or Coke out of the cooler and you just wait until your food is ready to go. And, but we ran into a lot of roadblocks. I mean, obviously it's like a fast casual. It's all about quality and speed, but it's also, it becomes a problem because if you're, my original idea was to have a kind of a Chick-fil-A model. The food is ready. When you order it, goes in the bag, you get it. You
so
walk
more
off.
Quick service than fast casual.
Yeah. Much more quick service. It didn't really work that way. After a while, we realized, okay, this is, we only have certain demand on certain hours where the demand is high enough for us to have everything pre-cooked and ready to go because the time span of the day you can take the dish is like maximum 30 to 45 minutes. After that, the dish is not going to be as good, so it needs to go to trash. It was a lot of struggles that way. So we came up with the systems of, okay, you have to really dial into our premix and the times that these orders come in and what volume they come in. So we can like be ahead of it and still offer that like 7 minutes ticket time to get people in and out, max 15 minutes. If it gets to 15 minutes, after a while, we decided to refund the full order.
Right. Like Del Bar, completely different beast. Really,
entirely different.
You're delivering an amazing experience.
Correct.
There. And people are taking their time, hour and a half.
Yeah.
You know, and with a fast casual, a quick service, to your point, to echo what you said earlier, it's about throughput. It's about getting as much food out as quickly as possible during peak hours.
Correct.
And you have to do volume to make
correct
money.
Yeah.
So when you have more options, it's just that's energy going in more directions than just doing a few things really well.
Correct. Yeah.
So what do you offer today? Like, what did you basically narrow it down to?
Well, the original menu had a lot of things. It had 3 or 4 different desserts. Like we had the baklava Persian ice cream sandwich, the baklava ice cream. We were trying to do donuts.
Baklava ice cream?
Yeah. Oh baklava ice cream, by the way, still on the menu is awesome.
Can I get that here? Or do I have to
You can get it here. Okay. Yeah, we'll get you fit after this. Then we had a couple of baked items like the pitas. They're like Turkish pizzas shaped in the form of a boat. We had 2 or 3 of those. We had 4 or 5 different sandwiches, 5 different plates, 2 different salads, 4 different dips, a few items that were grab and go. Then we had cocktails that were ready to go, glasses of wine, beer. And after a few months, we realized it was way too much on the menu. The space is very tiny. There's no way to execute this properly. So we had to slowly narrow it down. And over time, we got into the problems like, the way I like to do foods, I like to do it different. I like to go step out of a box and offer things in a different formats. And a lot of times my ethnic clientele, my Iranian clientele doesn't understand it because they think food should be served exactly the way they eat it at home versus understanding that there are so many different regions in Iran. Like I don't serve food that just from, not the typical food you would get in like a capital, right?
Yeah.
You go to New York, the food is different.
Yeah. I think
you drive around.
Iranians are known for being very traditional.
Correct.
Yeah.
They're very traditional. So there was a lot of fighting with the guests. I was like, oh, the bread you offer is not Persian, really.
Yeah.
But they don't understand, okay, the bread I offer has to work perfectly now. And it has to also work perfectly 3 hours later when it's an Uber bag coming to your home. So it's not getting soggy. So it needs to be a specific kind of bread.
Yeah.
It can't be your typical lavash bread on a wrap.
Right.
Because by the time you get it, it's going to be just soggy mess that you don't even want to eat.
Well, I think it's also cool to embrace who you are.
Correct.
You are Iranian-American.
Correct.
So why not be who you are? And why not have your menu reflect that? You know,
correct.
Think about how many Chinese-American restaurants there are.
Exactly.
You know, it's not exactly like it is in China, but it's the Americanized rendition. Right?
100%.
Yeah.
So for me, it was always about the most important one was the experience you're getting, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to give you a cholo kebab, like a rice and kebab that you're only if you're Iranian and you understand how to eat it. I have to simplify it because this is fast food.
Right. I'm making a note. Keep going.
No, you're good. This is not like a dining experience inside a restaurant that my server can come over. It's like, oh, this is a dish. Chef recommends eating it this way and that way. You're eating fast casual. So it needs to translate to anybody in a matter of seconds because I'm getting this box. I'm on lunch break, 45 minutes. I need to eat this and go.
Right. So
where, it needs to taste proper.
So where did you land? What are you doing today? What made it past the cuts?
What made it past the cuts? Keep going. Not listening to people and just keep doing it.
You cut all these things from the menu.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what is
BB today? What is a BB menu today?
Yeah.
So BB menu today is like is four different plates. They're kebabs and rices. Each one is paired up with different sauces that goes well with it and a side of pickles, vegetables. Four different sandwiches, two different dips. We took the pitas off the menu. We took the baklava off the menu. We took the donuts off the menu. We simplified the cocktail menu so it's easy, grab and go. We were offering Persian tea and things like that. We took them off the menu. We're like, all right, tea bags works better because tea is just sitting and you're not getting enough volume to have fresh tea for everybody. So we have to kind of simplify a lot of things. So now it works perfectly.
So that was that eight, like you said, the rice and the sandwiches. So correct. There was four of each.
So core items, I would say around eight items, perfect. Eight core items.
Perfect.
And they work perfectly.
So how did you, was it a combination of the level of attention and execution and what people are actually ordering? Like, how did you land there?
So when I first opened a concept, doesn't matter what concept it is, if it's even if for Delbert, even this is the duplicate, I'm here for easy first 6 months open to close every day because I rely on the feedback and I blend in with the guests. I sit in the corner on my laptop, I blend in because I want to hear every conversation,
right?
I want to hear every review, I want to see every problem so I can keep working on it every day because it's a matter of just like Rome wasn't built in a day. You have to just take a peek at it every day. Every day, tweak something a little bit better.
And like to your point earlier, like it's going to change. And you don't know how it's going to change until you do it.
Correct.
So you have to be there absorbing the reality of what your vision is going to turn into.
So we were R&Ding it off-site and on-site. So on-site, I'm tasting food. I'm watching guest reactions. I'm looking at ticket times. I'm looking at execution. I'm walking through the Ponce City Market to see how many people are eating my food and how does it look on their tables.
Yeah.
When they're opening from branding, like if somebody else walks by them, can they tell where this came from? Is there enough branding in there that somebody else can see, oh, this looks good. I don't have to ask them. I can tell from branding where this came from. All those little things. But then off-site, I'm ordering to-go orders. I'm ordering Uber Eats to see how the quality of food gets delivered to my house. I'm asking friends to order. I'm sending people gift cards. Hey, can you order a couple times a week? Send me pictures of the food. Like I need to know as much insight I can possibly do. So it took a while and we stuck to the menu and we realized we needed some more pictures. We needed some brochures. We needed some pictures up front. We needed people to understand what this food is. We need to tie into some Delbert branding in there so because people understand Delbert brand more than they understand BB. And a lot of people, when they look like BB, they're like, they don't really know what it is. And they would kind of walk off. And it's when you're in a market like that, you're like just like airport, right? You're like, it's a matter of something getting your eye. You have to capture brand that recognition. Attention.
Oh, I know that brand.
Correct.
Like,
yeah.
I know exactly what I'm going to get.
Yeah. Making a store look in a way that attracts your attention, right? The store is pink.
Right.
I mean, attracts your attention.
What does BB mean?
So BB translates to the queen of the household.
Okay. And what about Delbar?
So Delbar means someone or something that takes your heart away.
Okay.
So in Delbar, in Farsi and in a lot of other languages, it refers to like your lover.
Got it.
That's where you go with. And BB refers to queen. Every concept I do it around, all to reflect my grandma and my aunt, the people who taught me how to cook.
Got it.
And people who kind of got me excited into food.
Got it.
Because for longest time until I came to US, I didn't really see this as a career. I always look at it as passion. I like to cook, right? Career for me always different. When I came to US and saw these mega brands and these big, giant operations that made me realize, oh, this could actually be a career.
Right.
So I dedicated a name and a lot of story to my grandma and my aunt who just taught me to cook and fed me all my life.
Got it. So how did you transform or change the BB brand at all to be more recognizable and associated with Delbar?
Not necessarily. No, we just worked on some branding in this space.
Okay.
Some Delbar signage, some signage of food, so people see what they're going to order. All those things to just grab their attention once upon a time, a little bit better and better.
Got it. Why did you choose to get rid of the pitas? I'm curious.
Just menu was too large.
Okay.
The menu was too large. They weren't getting ordered as often as we wanted to make sure they're fresh quality.
Got it.
So then you have to go, basically.
Got it. I think you have a whole nother concept there, too.
Like I have a whole, there's, from creating Delbar and from creating BB, I have like at least five or six different concepts that are in the back burner to keep thinking about. And I'm like, no, I don't have the time to do it.
Yeah.
I can't do it all. You think I got to focus on what I got.
You think about the most successful brands out there. They just do one thing. This is correct. What we do.
Yeah.
We do rice. We do sandwiches. We do pita pockets.
Correct.
And I think you have so many opportunities within the Iranian culture, the options of food.
Yeah.
Man, you're going to.
It's a day to day struggle. Be like, should I go create another brand? Yeah. I'm like, no, sit your ass. Take care of what you got.
So, and where is BB today in terms of volume? Is it where you want it to be? Is it over exceeding?
Maybe it's where I want it to be. I think for the market it's in, it's definitely higher than everybody else in the market, which is awesome.
What do you mean by higher than everybody? Like make more profit?
Like sales-wise.
In that marketplace?
In that marketplace, okay.
Do you have access to all the other numbers?
No, but usually when you talk to landlords, they can tell you like how much everybody does per square foot.
Well, I'm happy people are talking there. I think it's important that people...
It's important to know because you always want to set in a standard for yourself, right? You always want to shoot for something.
Right.
If you don't have anything to shoot for, I feel like you're losing a lot of momentum.
Right.
It's like you always want to shoot high.
Yeah. You said that you created less options and you also made the options less expensive.
Correct.
How did you go about making things less expensive? Were you cutting into your profit or were you offering
to the profit.
Smaller portions maybe?
No, portions stayed the same.
Okay.
We just cut into the profit.
How does that make you feel?
It's different. It's difficult, right? Your concept is now not as profitable as you'd like it to be, but your quality of product is the way you want it to be. So it makes me proud.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tend to close my eyes on everything else.
Right. But having fewer options, you're probably doing higher throughput.
Correct. Yeah. We're doing higher. It gives me more power in the back end to be able to negotiate more on the prices that I'm getting things.
Got it.
Because I'm like, look, now we have three different locations coming up. Now coming up to five. So it gives me more negotiating power. I was like, let me give guests what I want them to have. The good quality of food at the price they wanted to. Because you know how everything is these days. Everything is just keep going up. Nothing ever comes down.
Yeah.
And I don't think people's salaries are justifying for it on the back end. So we wanted to keep the price point at the same exact way it was. We're like, we're just going to make less profit margin. And we're going to work on our backside with our distributor to try to get prices lower.
Okay.
To be able to offer those.
Got it.
But what I like to see BB is to become his own kind of a standalone concept throughout the city, like grab and go spot, drive throughs, that kind of stuff.
Got it. So how long did it take you to get to BB's where it is today? Like, has it been kind of set for a while? Because it's
right now, it's been set for a while. It's very consistent.
You said like 6 months it took you to figure this out?
It took around 6 months to employee turnovers, chef turnovers, operation turnovers to get to consistent result now, because a lot of it was R&D. Like, I've changed my bread 3 times
right
since I opened BB.
So you've been open for over about a year and a half. Like,
about
what
a year and a half.
You have like some data that has come in, some time has elapsed data to come in. What are the numbers telling you?
Numbers are telling me he's doing a good job.
Yeah,
numbers are telling me he's doing good.
Cool.
Numbers are telling me I need to be picking my next locations better. Because when you get involved with like a big food marketplaces, there's a lot of those percentage income, taking off percentage of sale that could take away your profit.
Yeah.
So it tells me I need to negotiate better on the next space. Okay.
Well, in your definition, what do you think a good job is? Like, paint a picture of what a good job is.
Good job to me is when my customers are happy, when my guests are happy.
Got it.
When my restaurant has good reputation.
So are you seeing a lot of recurring revenue from recurring guests?
Correct. Yeah.
So
we have so many regulars now at BB that eat probably like 4 meals a week at BB.
Okay.
And they live around there. And they're always there. And my staff is now starting to recognize them more and take care of them more.
In terms of data, are there numbers that you've seen that maybe were veering off course that you've been able to correct? And like, give me an example of like how you did that.
Like, correct the numbers? Yes. Like, for a first when we opened, like, we didn't have enough attractions. Didn't have enough attractions. So like, BB wasn't getting enough volume.
Okay.
Mall was busy. Food stalls were busy. But we weren't getting enough attractions. People would come up all the way to the front of it, look at the menu, and walk away. So it made us realize people are not understanding what we are. We need to be better at making people understand what we are.
Okay. You started talking about this earlier.
Yeah, yeah. So we were like, okay, we're looking at numbers. We're like, mall foot traffic is up. Our sales are down compared to everybody else. When you go to our stall, we don't see a whole lot of people. We're like, okay, we need something to captures the attention of people better. They need to understand what we are because our cuisine is still just very unknown to people.
Yeah.
Or like Food Pictures did a great job at it. We put a couple of cool posters up with pictures of food every day. If we flipped on them, we realized whatever the guest sees that day is what they buy that day. So we're like, okay, now we can control this. So at lunchtime, we're going to go to sandwiches because it's quicker, faster for people to grab and go. At dinner time, we're going to go to rice and kebab plates.
What are you using? Is it just the digital signage? Digital?
No, we actually had a digital signage. The mall didn't allow to have it. They really? Didn't like LCDs. So we went to old school Stupid. Posters. Yeah. Right now, it's at the door over here. You saw it.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask what
that was for BB.
So what's their... Is it just because they're trying to like have a feel?
Yeah. They don't like the TV situation in there.
Probably so maybe the power, like they don't try to get their power bill down or something.
No, it's not the power. They're just they feel like having LCDs and kind of that kind of takes away from the vibe that Ponce Market has. It takes away from their brand.
Oh, that's annoying.
Yeah.
You can tell these people aren't restaurant people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just can tell from that because like you'd want, I don't know. I don't
want to
be.
I would think you would want everybody in there to succeed, but yeah, it is what it is. Yeah. But those little things helped us. It's like, and we started listening to guests a lot. I'm like, okay, let's see what the guest wants.
Yeah. So what were you using? So you just literally just taking a photo and like you just swap out photos?
No. This is like the whole branded page we put together. We put basically pictures of all the sandwiches next to each other with their names next to it.
So this is all online?
What's that?
This is all online.
No. This is all in person. Like when you go to BB today, you'll see a poster board, big poster board sitting in the center of the restaurant. That we flip through the pictures on. And we start realizing whatever guest sees, whatever page we're on is what they're buying today.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool.
Got it. I think I see a trip to BB in my future before I leave Atlanta so I can see this in person. Anything in terms of BB that has been like a lesson for you or a struggle for you that hasn't come out?
Lesson or struggle for me?
While you're thinking about that, we're going to take a break to thank our sponsors and we'll be right back. Picture this. It's the end of the month and you're working your way through a shoebox full of invoices and manually entering costs into a janky spreadsheet that is being held together by bubblegum and prayers. And after hours of eye-stabbing tedium, you realize that your numbers don't even match. Oh my God. We've all been there. But it doesn't have to be this hard. Margin Edge can free you from spreadsheet hell. That's because Margin Edge is a complete restaurant management software that automates invoice processing and shows you your food costs and labor in real time. Just snap a picture of your invoice and Margin Edge takes it from there. Margin Edge will process your invoices automatically with line item detail and combine that information with sales from your POS to give you real-time reporting, including a daily P&L, up-to-date plate costs, and updated inventory count sheets. Stop spending hours to get numbers you're not 100% confident in when you could spend minutes and have accurate, real-time food and labor costs. Visit marginedge.com/unstoppable to learn more and to get a free monthly restaurant sales report packed with exclusive industry trends, data, and insight. This episode made possible by Owner.com. Owner.com is the quickest and easiest way for your customers to order directly from you without the expensive 30% commission fees. Ugh. With Owner.com, you'll save thousands every month when customers order through your website and branded app instead of third-party delivery apps, and reward your customers with a built-in loyalty program that turns them into regulars who order again and again. Owner.com also helps you rank higher on Google with world-class search engine optimization built specifically for restaurants with an AI-powered website. We cannot forget lists. Build a huge list of people who live near your restaurant fast and market to that list on autopilot with text and email sent at the perfect time to help you grow sales and stay top of mind. Owner.com gives you everything you need to grow and market your restaurant online with no contracts or hidden fees. Visit Owner.com/unstoppable right now to book your free demo and see why thousands of restaurant owners trust Owner.com to power their restaurants online. We're back. So I just asked you if there's any struggles we haven't highlighted in relation to BB before we move on to your second Del Bar.
So the struggle, there were a lot of different struggles. One struggle that comes up was to storage itself.
Storage?
Like, storage, yeah.
Okay.
Because like the space is so tiny, the physical space. Like being able to offer products at the rate that you want, at the speed that you want, you have to have a lot of more prep space, right?
Right.
Prepping. The other part was definitely employee retention. Because you're working in a market where people can just step 1 or 2 feet and get another job. Mm. And they're constantly being poached by different restaurants.
How'd you overcome that? Well, I think we kind of talked about the space. You narrowed your offering.
Yeah. We narrowed our offering. With the employees, we tried to pull them into like a tip sharing model.
Okay.
So when the guest goes on the counter and they tip, the tip gets divided between the back of house employees and front of house employees.
Okay. Can you share more about that process and what it looks like?
Yeah, yeah. So let's say you go to any fast casual space today, like any space these days, when there's digital card reader up front, it prompts you to tip. And that tip goes to the team in the back of the house. So it made him understand how to, it made him care more about the restaurant itself and made him understand the fruit of their labor. The better they produce today, the more regulars they have, the better tips it comes and less staff in a restaurant, so it becomes their hourly average goes up.
Yeah, yeah. As somebody who has spent the majority of their career in high touch, fine dining, how have you been training your staff in fast casual or even quick service to offer that same level? Like you can't offer the same level of service because you have less time,
yeah,
right? You need time to really make an impact. But what are you doing to deliver the highest service you can, highest quality service you can? How are you training them? What does that look like?
For training aspect is the staff needs to know ins and out of the food.
Okay.
Because they have that maximum 2 minutes interaction with the guests up front.
Right.
A lot of interactions happens online because people order online and pick it up or Uber Eats or whatever it is. But we also understood the line of checkout. Basically, as the guest walks through it, they need to be educated on the food until they get to the register.
How do you educate your staff?
This is not for staff. This is for the guest perspective. So that level of service, that level of education that we do at dine-in, our service do for the guests, it needs to happen throughout the process or throughout the story. So from whatever it's Instagram or email marketing or posters, just like a food posters that we talked about, or walking through our coolers that are open, grabbing items. So it's like parts of that education happens throughout before you get to register. Then you have the person on a register who can guide you through the menu and help you pick something.
This is something I picked up about you. Even just walking in today,
yeah,
you're very aware, it's obvious, of the experience that you're creating for your guests as soon as they're within eye shot.
Correct.
Of your restaurant. Yeah. You walk into this place, Del Bar, we're not talking about Del Bar yet, but you are walking through a tunnel of flowers and you're coming into an experience. In fast casual, that experience has to be more geared towards education because you don't have time to like really spend with a lot of guests. You have to be influencing them to help that decision making process along the way.
Correct.
So
because you have a very like short attention span of the guests, like they're coming grabbing. A lot of times they're on lunch break. They don't even want to talk to you. They don't want to have any interactions. But they just want to get their food and go. Then it comes to packaging, right? What goes inside the bag?
Yeah.
That education aspect of it. Like if a sumac container goes inside a pack, a note goes with it to understand what this is for. Mm. Like this is a spice that you put on rice and tomato. We made a lot of things simplified. In Iranian culture, when you eat the kebabs, like you eat a kebab and rice plate, a traditional one, let's say the beef kebab and the regular white rice, you're supposed to chop up the tomato, add sumac and butter to it, and eat it with your rice and meat, and that enhances the flavor by, I would say, like 200%. The flavor tastes entirely different. So we're like, okay, how are we going to make the guests understand this? So we're like, okay, we're going to make the sauce out of it. We're going to grill the tomatoes. We're going to blend it up with sumac, and we're going to pour it next to the kebabs, next to the rice, so they have to eat it with it. Right? Now it's not no longer just a grilled tomato that you could skip because you don't like tomato. Right. So you're, now it's part of your experience.
So you're eliminating one of the steps of the process, so they know that it goes together. So you don't have to do it themselves.
Correct. And it backfires when you get traditional Iranians, because they're like, "Oh, that's not how you eat kebabs," but they don't understand the whole purpose. It's been designed to be in that way.
Got it.
So you get the most amount of flavors out of it.
Back to educating the guest. Can you give me some more specific examples? You kind of went through it before. I don't know if I fully understand the first time. So they're approaching the counter. What's the first thing that they see that's making an influence, like to educate them?
The first thing they see is pictures of food.
Okay. And
understanding what those foods are with the names next to them.
Is it exactly what it's going to look like when it comes
to them? Exactly what they're going to look like. It's not like the McDonald's pictures that you get. No, it's literally the exact sandwich that it's going to look like. And all the shots are taken from the side, so you can see almost every ingredient inside the sandwich.
Okay.
Andrew Thomas did our photography and did a fantastic job in kind of delivering the open face sandwich without it being open.
You're taking the mystery out of it.
Correct. Yeah. So you can see it. Okay. There's a chicken in there. There's a yogurt in there. There's onions in there. There's sumac in there. You can see the bread. So it gives you a visual of what you're about to eat. Basically what we were trying to do with the kind of having one of each item on the counter so you can see what you're ordering.
Yeah.
But we kind of did that in the poster format.
Got it.
Because of the lack of space.
Got it.
And it kind of worked out much better for our space.
Got it. Cool. Do you want to move on to Del Bar number 2?
Sure.
All right. So, Del Bar number 2, when did it open?
Del Bar number 2 opened on our 3-year anniversary of Del Bar. Last year in May/June.
Okay. So what year, what day is, so it's been about not quite a year.
Quite a year, yeah. Almost a year. So May 5th of last year is when we opened.
Okay.
Del Bar Alfredo.
Yeah.
Which was our 3-year anniversary of Del Bar. So the original Del Bar location opened May 5th of 2020.
Okay.
For takeout. And we used that as kind of our benchmark of where we want to open next.
So 3 years later, you open your second.
3 years locate. 3 years later, we opened this one.
So in November, when I last interviewed you of 2022... I would say 7 months before opening Del Bar number 2, where were you in the process of opening Del Bar number 2?
So in November, we had the actual location. We had the physical location. We were starting to look into the construction, trying to figure out the design. I opened this with a low budget, so I didn't really hire anybody to do it. I designed it myself. I did a lot of work myself.
You got a lot of background. Your uncle, your dad, architects. Yeah. It's good people to have in your corner when you're a restaurant owner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we did most of the work ourselves, and it took us around 5 to 6 months of actual remodeling. We originally took over the space. It looked pretty good. We were like, oh, we don't need to do a whole lot of work to it. But as you get into the construction, you start realizing, oh, there's so much I need to fix.
Right.
Yeah, so slowly getting bigger and bigger and bigger project.
What were the things that you think you needed to fix that were absolutely necessary?
Originally, we were like, oh, we're just going to facelift it, you know, paint it up, new furniture, new kitchen equipment, change out the floors, change out the decor a little bit. But as we got into it, it started becoming more and more and more. Construction is one of those things, if you've ever done it, especially in commercial form, whatever you think it's going to cost you at least half times more.
Right. There's always something you don't consider.
Correct.
You start pulling up floors, you go, oh, there isn't a drain here? Oh, there isn't, like, oh,
we and they're plumbing? Like, you open plumbing, it's like, oh, wow, I have to replace all this plumbing. They're all rotten. Or, like, you open a wall, it's like, well, there's mold everywhere. I need to replace all this. You know?
How old was this building when you purchased
this building is 22 years old, which is not a whole lot for a restaurant business. But the problem was this building was almost vacant for 4 years or 5 years.
Neglected.
Yeah. So neglected, just sitting. So there was a lot of problems that we had to fix in it. And we purchased the property. And our goal was always to find Del Bar locations that we could purchase a property. So, because, I mean, owning land is one of the best things to do. It's a huge investment. So, basically, we're not paying rent. We're actually paying into the mortgage.
Yeah. This is where I feel like a jerk sometimes. Because I'm really curious about, like, you have a silent partner.
Correct.
Are you owning the land or is he owning the land? Or
we both are.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Good. I'm happy.
We're in everything together. And this was one of those things that at the time we had the bucket location we were working on. I can't remember if I told you how I came across this property.
The Bucket location?
Yeah. So we were looking at opening a Del Bar and Bucket.
You said Buckhead. Sorry.
No, sorry.
You said Bucket. My apologies.
No, we were looking at opening location in Bucket. And at the time, we were like, okay, if you ever want to go anywhere else beside Inman Park and Bucket, we kind of want to figure out a way to own the land. So one day I was driving by here. I was actually at the Persian store buying some products for the restaurant. Driving by this property, I've always seen this property. It's always sit here. And it's such a beautiful property from outside. I mean, architecture just takes the heart of me away. So I saw this building. I was like, wow, this is a cool-ass building. I knew who owned it. So while I was driving, I was like, let me shoot my shot. I shoot a text to the guy. I was like, would you ever consider selling this? He was like, yeah. I was like, give me a price. And kind of start, that's how the ball started rolling.
I mean, I think that's really important advice right there is like, don't wait for things to go on sale. Just like,
shoot your shot.
So I'm curious, what was it about this space that had it? It's beautiful, to your point, beautiful architecture, beautiful space. Why was it empty for 4 years?
So the guy who owned it, he owns a lot of properties.
Yeah.
And he had a Mexican restaurant here. Then he switched to an Indian restaurant. Then after that, he kind of shut it down. And it just sat on the space. He never had it for sale. Every now and then he would throw occasional like parties in here, rent it out for like private events and stuff. Not sure why he kept it. He just had it had a sentimental value for him. And he lives very close by. So when the time came, and I kind of knew the guy, so I shoot him a text and was like, hey, do you want to sell this? You gave me a price. We started negotiating. He was so stuck with this location that it took me like 7 months to just write a basic contract to buy the property from him. But to your point, don't ever wait for things to go on sale. Like every one of the restaurant locations I've found was through a relationship. Like this was I knew the person who owned it. The original Del Bar location. I never in my dream thought I could have scored a location like that one. It happened through a relationship. I knew
right.
The person who was operating it before, and I was like, hey, if you ever want to get out of lease, I can help you out.
Be someone's exit strategy.
Correct.
So many people get into this industry and go, what did I do? I just want a way out. Be the way out.
Correct.
Yeah.
Same thing with our current Bucket location that we're working on that's going to open in 3 weeks. In 3 months, sorry. Not 3 weeks. Yep. 3 weeks, we would not be sitting right here.
Yeah. Sorry, Eric, it's not going to work.
Yeah. In 3 months. So our original Bucket location was a different space in Bucket, the corner of Irby Avenue and Roswell Road. We were about to start construction. We were taking bets from GCs. The design was fully done. We were about to groundbreak and start construction until we found out, the building is not designed for solid fuel operation. We cook everything on charcoal.
Shout out to DeMont Grills.
Yes, we cook everything on charcoal. And when they built the building originally, they built it as a retail underneath. Then they changed their mind and want to put the restaurant on it. Not knowing that we're not just every kind of restaurant. For us to have a restaurant, our exhaust system needs to go all the way to the roof of the building, which is 23 stories high. Which will cost me and the landlord around $2 million to run.
Jesus, just for a hood system.
Just for a hood system. So it was a mutual agreement to cancel the lease, which worked out perfectly for us because I was working on this.
That's the first thing you're looking for now when you go to a place.
Correct. Now the first thing we do is like, all right, let's see if they can handle the exhaust system. Right?
Yeah.
There's so much you learn throughout this process because the first two of them, I did it without anybody. I didn't have a GC or architect, nobody. I kind of learned from my mistakes. And that's been a story of my life. I've always learned everything from my mistakes.
Isn't that like you got like employee of the month and like the speech was here as far as Kargar and he is a perfect example of learning from all of his mistakes.
Yep. That's basically I've done every mistake in a book. And I think it's always the best way to learn things. After that.
I want to share something real quick.
Go ahead.
I heard a quote on a song once or recently. I think it was like Connor, like that new young guy who's a Connor, I don't know. He's a rapper. He said, I don't make mistakes. Mistakes make me.
Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah. I'm made out of mistakes.
That's a good line.
Yeah.
Anyway, I apologize for interrupting.
Yeah. Mistakes to me are like experiences. Like that's how you learn things.
So you're talking about the hood system.
So we're talking about a hood system. So our bucket lease got canceled, which actually worked perfect. At the same time, there was a rumor of a very, very great location in Bucket not renewing their lease. And I had to figure out a way to get in there. The space wasn't in market yet, right? This is the current Del Bar Bucket location that we're working on.
Turnkey?
Turnkey.
Ish.
The building was this again. Same thing happened as Alfreda. We took over a space thinking, it was a restaurant before. We can just fix it up. They were using solid fuel, so it shouldn't be any issues. Then we started getting into it, and it was like, the building's from 1980. There's so much to fix.
Yeah.
So you started becoming more and more of a bigger project than what I thought.
Yeah, I'm smiling because I'm like, 1980 is not that long ago, but then I just realized that I'm getting old. And that's almost 40 years ago. I was like,
it's like 45 years ago. Yeah. We're like plumbing systems from 45 years ago. Everything needs to be. Yeah, and the space is such a jewel in Bucket that the landlords weren't giving it away.
Yeah.
They were like, we have different spaces that are available within our shopping center. We're keeping this one for last resort because everyone wanted that one because already a restaurant. So I had to figure out a lot of back ways of getting to know these people. And they were mad at me at the time because, scrolling back. Before I signed my Bucket location, I was negotiating two locations at the same time in Bucket. One was with the same group that I'm with now within the same complex. So we're looking at leases, looking at the sales and all these things, like how much they want, rent, blah, blah, blah. Then one space, the one that ended up not happening gave me such a good deal. I was like, I have to take this one because they're just giving me such a good deal on TI and rent and all that stuff. And the location is just as good. I'm like, let me go for that.
Were you negotiating TI? And that's tenant.
Correct. Tenant improvement.
Improvements for people.
Yeah. We were negotiating TI, percentage rent, regular rent, all that stuff.
Any advice on negotiating TI?
What's that?
Any advice on negotiating TI?
You always negotiate as much as you can.
So, how do you approach that? You just put everything on the table and see what they take off, and
yeah,
okay.
You shoot for the sky and see what they come down to, right?
What are the obvious ones that we should shoot for?
Like for us negotiating TI, we want it around over $200 per square foot, coming from landlord to build the restaurant.
So is that typically the language you use, by square foot, to negotiate?
By square foot, yeah. Everything in restaurant business is usually by square foot. Like even when we talk about sales of a restaurant, nobody talks about overall sales. They talk about by square foot, they make that much.
Okay. So what's normal? Are there any points of reference?
TI could go anywhere from $70 a square foot to $300 a square foot, depending on where you are, who you're working with, what kind of concept you're building. If it's a first generation of space. Because the space in the first generation is just a shell. It's just a concrete box that you have to create everything in.
So do you just show up and say, I want 300, square space, TI?
So Del Mar had such a good reputation that landlords were coming after us and offering us. So we're like, you want me so badly in your space, this is how much it will cost you.
Yeah.
Right? And the one that got canceled was, they were giving us very good money, but ended up canceling. But during the process of picking that location versus the other one, I pissed off the previous ones. Right, we were so almost done with the negotiation, but we ended up picking the other property. So they didn't want to give me a second chance.
Yeah.
So when the time came, another space in their property was available to lease, they didn't even want to talk to me.
Yeah. One of the things that you pointed out in our first conversation is the importance of relationships.
Correct.
And it's not just with guests.
Correct.
It's not it's not just the people that work under the same roof as you. It's everybody your business touches.
Correct. Yeah. Now, this is one of the things that I'm trying to teach my staff these days and my employees is you're ambassador of this restaurant, whether you know it or not.
Yeah.
If people see you in the restaurant, they make a connection with you in the restaurant. And the better experience you provide, the better your restaurant gives them that wow experience, the more relationship they want with you. So outside this brand, you might just be a student going to school or having a hobby, but within these walls and even outside, you're still ambassador of this restaurant. And that will open so many doors for you, right? That's how every door is open. It's all about these relationships, like how you built it. We don't look at... This is what I try to teach my service. Don't look at serving job as a serving job. You're not serving. For you, this might be, you're trying to put food on the table, right? Pay your rent. Trying to get through school. But to me, this is the best networking event you'll ever have. The best networking opportunity you'll ever have. People pay so much to be in this kind of space in front of a clientele that you're dealing with to network with them.
Yeah, here's your opportunity to be somebody's favorite person.
Correct.
And the people that are coming into this place are good people to get on the good side of.
Yeah. Your next boss is sitting on your table.
Your next
partner is sitting on your table. Yeah. Your next investor is sitting on your table. So the moment they understand that, they take the job to a different level. They take it a lot more serious. And they understand it's just not about, you're not here to fill out a time and get a paycheck. You're here to make as many connections as you can.
I'm going to push back and I'm going to say you are still a server, but the best way to win people is to serve them.
Correct.
To serve them in the physical way that we associate with the job, but also to serve their soul, to serve them in being present, to serve them in being somebody that lifts them up every day. We are in the service industry and
everybody's in service industry. Yeah.
That's our purpose as humans is to serve other humans. We go further together. We're here to take care of each other. Be of service and be proud that you're of service.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, whether it's your kids, mom, dad, significant other, you're always serving somebody. Yeah. Doesn't matter what business you're in.
It's what makes us human. Yeah. It's what we do.
Yeah. And when it comes to business, like the business only exists because there is a service that needs to be done.
Yeah.
There's a service that needs to be provided. And whatever that you figure out, whether it's landscaping, I don't know, washing cars, running a restaurant, doing a podcast, you're filling up a service. So going back to that, I realized I've screwed up on a relationship and it was biting me in the ass. Mm. So I ended up figuring out a way, and I had clients, like guests coming up to me. It was like, hey, have you heard this restaurant not renewing their lease? Hey, have you heard this is not renewing? This would be a great bucket location. This would be this and that. So I realized I had to pull some strings and figure out how I can get back on that table.
How'd you do it?
Took a lot of phone calls.
Yeah.
Took a lot of emails.
What'd
a lot of gave me another chance.
What did you say? How did you do? Like, how did you repair that relationship?
So I looked for anybody who knew anybody in that company. Like all my clientele, like in a business you do, you have a network around you, right? My best network is my employees and my guests. My guests are my biggest network. Just like I said, it's like we're not serving them; we're getting to know them, and that's where the value comes in. That's the value of getting to know your guest comes in. So I found out a lot of guests that had relationship with that company. They were like, I can get you a second chance. I can get you an email to reintroduce you again. Right?
It's a second chance. It's getting in front of them again. But what did you do? What's the first thing you said to these people when you started talking to them?
We're sorry.
Yeah. So you basically acknowledged that you were wrong.
Correct. We acknowledged that we were wrong. We acknowledged that it was confusion, that we were so close to signing lease, but we had to take the other space. I basically explained to them, hey, look, they were offering us such a good deal that I couldn't say no to.
Right.
So I had to take it.
Yeah.
And if you give me your space, I can bring so much more foot traffic and revenue for you. And that's kind of how it basically happened.
How's that relationship today?
It's beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Glad to hear that.
It's beautiful.
Awesome.
And it's going to be one of our best locations, I think. Is putting us on a much bigger scale because the brands that we're going to be part of, they're just such a much higher caliber.
Right. So let's bring it back to Del Bar number two. We kind of got derailed with Del Bar number three, but I'm happy to get all that information. You opened almost a year ago. We're a month away from being a year old. Almost happy birthday time. You said that some of the thought was you're going to come in, you're going to put fresh paint on, do the floors, but then you started pulling things up and you started realizing maybe there's some mold over here. We got to do some
new plumbing. We started realizing building was neglected for such a long time that it was going to cost us a lot more to repair it. And we had the point, we had already put all of our money down toward purchasing the property. So it was a very struggling opening for us. It was the first time I was like, financial stress is one of the biggest stress to me, in my opinion. And this was probably my hardest restaurant opening. Mm-hmm.
So how does that work? I mean, you have a silent partner, and I don't need you to air their laundry out, but I'm assuming they put the money up to buy the property.
Correct,
right? Yeah. How do you work that out with them? Do they like give you a budget of like, I'm going to cover the cost. Here's what I can and willing to give you to build out. Like, how does that work?
So the way me and my silent partner works, he's very silent.
Yeah,
I make all the decisions.
And I respect
for the business.
That silence.
No, it's amazing. He trusts me, and he just stays out of my way. I'll just basically tell him where to sign.
Yeah,
right. And ever since we started Del Bar, our goal was to grow. Our goal was to grow as an organization. So we put everything we made back into the business.
Yeah.
We kind of built it, keep going and building it. So we're like, we need to buy the property, and buying property is always great. Great decision.
Yeah.
Nobody would ever tell you not to buy the property.
If you can buy a property, buy a property.
Buy the property. Yeah. Correct. So the goal was to buy the property. So we just kind of put everything we had into this new location.
Got it. So when you started realizing that it was going to be more expensive, are you willing to share what had to be done? Like, what was your projected cost and what was your reality?
So my projected cost versus my reality was, I'm going to tell you, the reality was 6-7 times more expensive than my projected cost.
Damn.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, dude.
Yeah. And I'm one of those people that I like to get my hands dirty. I get involved. And my staff always tells me, you have a very expensive taste. I realized how expensive a taste I had.
Well, I mean, when it came to this. Shows, dude. This place is so gorgeous. Yeah. And like, I am going to B-roll the shit out of this place. Because I walked in, I was like, oh, I cannot wait to get the camera out. It's gorgeous.
Oh, it's a beautiful
You have a
space.
Moat, for God's sake.
Yeah, it's a beautiful space. Yeah. It's a beautiful space. Yeah. And I spent a lot more money than I thought I was going to do on it.
Yeah.
But we made it happen. It was a struggle to get it open. Because when you spend that much money, you have to get it open. Like, you're putting yourself in this time crunch. Like, I have a financial obligation to get this thing open.
What was your biggest struggle?
My biggest struggle was actually opening the space.
So, like,
because of the financial strength, I didn't do the things that I had to do to make sure I succeed in the space.
Because of the financial what?
Financial struggle.
Struggle. You didn't do what you had to do.
Correct. So let's say you want to open a restaurant, right? Yeah. A lot of times there are a lot of things you could take into account, like how much it would cost to renovate, furniture, equipment. Then the big aspect of it, a lot of times, when you're starting in this business, that you overlook.
Yeah, things you just don't know until you know.
Things that you know. You don't know how much working capital you're going to need. You don't know how much money you need to put aside to hire people, to train people for weeks and months until you have the right product to open the door with. Right, that's the part that I kind of neglected, and I struggled from it.
Yeah,
and I learned from it.
Yeah. So when did you want to be open?
Well, the time they wanted to open was entirely different from the time we actually opened. This was supposed to open before BB.
Yeah.
But we got into like permitting issues. We realized we needed to do a lot more with the building. It wasn't going to be that easy. So we kind of delayed it and delayed it and delayed it until May of 2023.
Okay. What was the tipping point for you in terms of getting open? And like you said, you know, eventually you opened.
Correct.
So there was a struggle with the training and all this stuff. But like, when did things start to like traction?
Get better?
Yeah.
Probably like 4 or 5 months after opening.
Okay.
4 or 5 months after opening, we started getting... And this is a different market. So let's say... underestimated how hard it was going to be for me to find staff in this market.
Yeah. And that was one of the things I was curious about, staffing. You know, when you're in the city,
busyness volume,
you got people all around different. You. You got lots of young people who want to live in the city and they're looking for their special person, and everybody is out and about and it's just active. It's lively.
Correct.
You
know? And we were in such a busy neighborhood.
Right.
That we underestimated like the foot traffic not going to be the same.
Right.
Like people in suburbs are different. They don't
more
go.
Families.
Yeah, more families. They don't go dine around Monday through Friday as much, or Monday through Thursday as much. Most of their dining happens on the weekend. So a lot of those things,
less business events, probably.
Correct. Yeah, staffing. We realized how difficult it was because most of the experienced servers were in the city.
Mm. So how are you overcoming these challenges? I mean, there's so many we just dropped, right? So you can't do much about physical location, but I think the one thing you can do is how do you attract people?
How do you attract people? Like. Quality. Like, you remember how we talked about Delbar was created from creating experience. Mm-hmm. Like, this location needs to be experienced from the moment you pull up to this parking lot.
Check that box, brother.
Yeah. So that was a part of it, right? Yeah. From like the dining experience. We're like, okay, the talent we can get over here is a lot more raw than the talent we can get in the city. We just need to invest so much more in training.
Okay. So they're blank canvas.
Correct. Black canvas.
Yeah.
Blank canvas. And we have to teach them everything about wine, booze, and alcohol, and service. And it's going to be a lot tougher. They don't understand. And they're younger crowds. So they look at this as like a stepstone, like we talked about. They look at this as like, oh, this is just a job for me. I'm just making a paycheck. So you have to open their eyes and make them understand, no, this is more than that if you want it to be.
Right.
You have every choice to make. To make this much bigger.
Yeah.
You have every choice to make this as your last stepping stone.
Right.
Before you get a partner, before you have an investor, before you have the next job lined up.
I think there's just that air about the industry, the stigma that it's just for now. And I think that part what we have to do to transform the industry is to be an opportunity for people.
Correct.
But you know, everybody's defense, there wasn't always a lot of opportunity in the restaurant industry. You know, there has been, but I think we're getting better about sharing the pie. You know what I'm saying? Creating opportunity for people. You know, for you, a big part of why you left your last job was because there was an opportunity.
There was no opportunity.
You were busting your fucking ass.
Yeah.
But you weren't getting a piece of the pie.
Correct.
And you can't you can't expect people to treat it like they own it if they don't own it. Literally just had Southern Teague on the show.
Yeah.
And he said, nobody will ever treat my business the way I treat it because it's my business. Correct. I own it. If I can get 70% out of somebody to show up, 70% of how I show up, I'm doing something special.
Correct.
If you want somebody to treat it like they own it, I mean, you're paying them one way or another.
Yeah.
You know, like if they have stake in the business, they're going to treat it differently.
Correct.
This is a controversial subject. Where do you fall on it?
I'll fall on it the exact same way. That's kind of a reason I left the previous job that we talked about.
Right.
It's kind of a reason I joined Waffle House because I knew I could be stock owner in the business, right? And it's kind of a route I want to take Delbar with us. So right now we do that aspect with our bonus program, basically. We have a tremendous bonus structure. And if you can tap into it, you can make so much more and you basically feel the fruit of your labor. The busier your restaurant, the better you succeed, the more retention you have, the more you make.
So you have a bonus program. You're willing to work with people to develop them.
Correct.
You're helping them understand that there's an opportunity here.
Correct.
If you give us your time and energy. What else?
We help them understand I'm here to make them bonus. Mm. I'm here to help them whatever they need to figure out to get them there so they can make the money that they're just feeling very successful with, right? Because for everybody, it's just different. Like some people, everyone needs is different. One is understanding people need. The other one, understanding that you need to give something back in return. Mm-hmm. If you're expecting, like, you can't expect people to be owner of your business when you pay them minimum wage. It's just never going to work.
Right.
It's just not, it just doesn't make any sense.
That is changing about our industry, and I'm happy to say. When I started this podcast over 10 years ago, I think that was one of the things that, like, you know, there were very few people at the top of the pyramid.
Correct.
And you're starting to see a flattening of the hierarchy.
Yeah. I think it's this industry, and also I feel like the idea of business in general is still like that.
Yeah, it was a mystery to most people.
Yeah, mystery to most people. Everybody's just a number to the bigger business.
I hate to use this word because I feel like it's an overplayed word, but it was systemic.
Correct.
You know, from the day that we go to school, we're being conditioned to be an employee.
We're trained to be a worker.
The school system was built by, at least the American school system was built to crank out employees.
Correct. Exactly.
And, you know,
like you go to school, you don't learn how to start a business. Nobody ever teaches you that.
You're being conditioned to be a cog in a wheel.
Correct.
You're learning how to do one thing really well.
Yeah.
I think that has to change.
Correct.
What do you want to talk about?
I don't know. I feel like you're going the right direction.
Okay. So, like, here...
You want to talk about the philosophy of this industry?
Well, really the format of the show is, who are you? You know, how did you get to where you are today? Where are you today and where are you going? I want to unpackage a little bit more of the where you are today. Like, I'm curious about the community. This space, like we mentioned, 300 plus seats, beautiful location. I would be worried. Honestly, I'd be worried if you were renting this space because I would imagine the rent on a facility like this. What would you say a rent would be?
High.
What would you guess?
Rent on a space like this would be anywhere from 30 to 40K a month.
Yeah, right? Correct. So I think the fact that you own it is so smart because it gives you that time to develop the brand and you're not like, you know the person who owns it.
Yeah.
You.
If I didn't own it, there was no way I would take a space this big.
Right.
There was no freaking way. Because it just doesn't make sense on paper.
Right. And we had Doug Turbish on the show, the owner of Seed Kitchen and Bar, I believe is the full name, in STEM Wine Bar. He also had Drift.
Drift, yeah.
Which was open for, I think, 8 years.
Yeah, it was open for a long time.
Yeah. High quality, high standards, beautiful restaurant. They had to close a couple months ago. And they just couldn't get the demographic to buy in.
Correct.
7 days a week.
Correct.
On the weekends, gangbusters. Is that a fear of yours here?
Oh yeah, it always is.
How does that make?
This is what I try to. Fear. This is what I try to teach. This is what I try to tell people. Like, every restaurant should be busy at 7 o'clock on a Saturday.
Yeah,
but that doesn't tell you how the restaurant does. What tells you how the restaurant does is how much volume it brings in Monday through Thursday. Mm-hmm.
How's it doing?
Because everybody goes out. It's doing pretty good. Yeah. It's doing much, but it's not doing as good as I thought it was going to do. But my expectations were way too high. My expectations were city expectations. But comparing to the market, it does great.
Okay.
It does amazing. It's harder. It's more of a struggle for me over here to brand and to market. This market, I feel like, is slightly different. In the city, my source of marketing is all digital, right? Instagram, social, Facebook, guest that comes in, word of mouth. In this market, I feel like word of mouth does the best marketing. Because you're dealing with more older people that don't spend as much time on social media to come across your brand, right? And the way, and we kind of went against our trajectory. Our trajectory was to work from Midtown to Bucket to Alpharetta. So everywhere you go, I feel like you're creating a radius of awareness around you, right?
Yeah.
If I would have gone the same way that I was supposed to go, this would have been the busiest location than what it is right now.
Versus the exact traffic opposite. Circles, basically. Yeah. You want to start, and I love that approach. And sometimes I see people, they're like, oh, this concept is killing in Atlanta. Let's go to Charleston. Let's go to Asheville. Let's Charlotte, you know? But you have no brand recognition.
Correct.
So if you can dominate a market.
Yeah.
And you can get to the point for like 10 years where you do that centrific circle. So and you just like everywhere you go, like, oh, there's a new Del Bar going here. Oh God, have you been to the one in Atlanta, the original? It's so good. Yeah. And make that energy, that buzz. So people go into the city to experience it because they heard about it and it was so good. And now there's one coming closer to us. Correct. Yes.
So now my goal is slightly different. So I was thinking the same way. I was like, oh, we're doing so good. Let's go to DC. Let's go to New York. Let's go to this. Then I'm like, no, why?
Right.
I live in Atlanta.
Right.
I have a network in Atlanta. I have power in Atlanta. I have brand recognition in Atlanta.
Do you want to get on a plane every day?
Correct. Yeah. No, I'm like, no.
I'll answer the question for you. No, you do not.
I hate traveling. So
yeah.
I'm like, okay, there's other things I can do. Like I started studying like a lot of restaurant groups that have more than one concept. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yes, I can make one concept fantastic and grow it and scale it. And figure out from there where my exit strategy is. Or I can make Atlanta my ecosystem. I can create BBs around Del Bars. So when you don't want to go dine out, you want that fast casual bite, you can get your $15, $20 sandwich.
Right.
Then be satisfied.
Yeah.
Now I'm working on the different concept, which is Eden, which is like a nighttime aspect of it. I'm like, okay, I want to create something similar to Del Bar, which is more not just a dinner experience. It's dinner and a show, dinner and a party. So we're working on a different concept called Eden that's going to open March of next year. This will be your super club. And like your super club that you dine, enjoy, and the restaurant turns into a club at night.
Okay. I love it, man. One more thing I just want to add on to that idea of centrific scale centrific circle scaling. So like if you're trying to visualize, like, what do you mean? So you have a circle in the middle is the bullseye. That's your first location. Go out 15, 20 miles, make a circle around that one. And you just kind of, you know, and then you,
this is your market.
Yeah. Once you have one north, once you have one south, once you have one east, once you have one west, you go out another ring. Right. And you just keep on going out and out and out. The other really beneficial thing about this is we talked about this before, opportunity for growth.
Yeah.
When your business becomes a tool, it's really you're just cranking out professionals. So they're going through the university, and as they're graduating the program, people and cash flow determine growth, right? Yeah.
So you want to become the institution.
So how do you know when to open the next one? Well, we have people that have hit a wall here.
Correct.
And if we don't give them an opportunity to buy in or whatever, they're gonna pull a Fars and go do their own thing.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah.
So like you literally become a machine to crank out professionals and create opportunity. But when it's close, now you don't have to ask somebody to move to a different city. And that's one of the challenges when you start going to other cities too. Yeah. Is like, oh, my whole
finding a proper talent.
Not just my clientele, but my whole community of professionals is here.
Correct.
You're gonna make people move with their families to like a new city.
Yeah.
You know,
it has its own struggles. Like, doesn't mean it's going to be bad. You should go out of a state. You should have struggle.
There are people who want to do that.
Yeah. To me, the struggle is what builds you and makes you stronger. This is what I was literally talking about to my team the other day. It was like, if we don't have problems, we're not getting better. Mm. We have to have problems. Problems means we're getting better.
Yeah.
Right. One of my good mentors always told me, it's like, if you're not getting outstanding reviews, that means you're just doing a mediocre job. So you're not getting any better. right? Mm-hmm. To me, like, problem makes me stronger.
Yeah.
I'll learn from them. I get better at them.
Yeah.
And I know what to do next. So it's like, and this is also the thing after 21 ever works in this industry. Nobody's ever, don't take it personal. Don't think people don't want you to succeed. Right. If you work for an organization, organization wants you to succeed. Because the faster you succeed, the better you become, the better they can grow. And you come up with them, right? You come up as an organization, grow within the organization, do everything you can to be there. Go above and beyond. Don't put in just the bare minimum. Ask, hey, the best people I've grown in my organization are the ones that ask every day, what can I do to be better? What can I do to help you?
Yeah.
And that's how they grow next to it.
I love it.
Just like you said, it's like, there's no way for me to open another restaurant unless I have people that have grown to the level to go and open it.
Right. I mean, I'm dealing with this right now. Like, yeah. I feel like Restaurant Unstoppable is getting to this point where it's like, I think I'm good
at a protege.
Well, I mean, I can only be good at so many things.
Correct.
And I think that, and this is where I hate saying publicly what I think I'm good at, but I think I'm good at getting people to get vulnerable and open up.
Yeah.
And so, like, I have a good purpose.
Yeah.
My mission is solid. You know, like, I'm a well-intended individual and I mean to do the right thing. I think that translates to people. And, I think I can get people to get more vulnerable than usual. Yeah. So the podcast, the content is good, but where I'm not good is at promoting myself. You know what I'm saying? Where I'm not good at, like, I'm good at creating the content, but, like, I'm not good about being on social media and letting people who haven't discovered it know how good it is. You know? So if you're listening to this and you want an opportunity, like, I am looking to find that person, that rocket fuel to take this to the next way. And I'm trying to be better about echoing that. I do want to talk about your space here. I mean, 4.6 star review for your location here. I think that's a little bit lower than you want in the city. You're at 4.7 or something.
4.8 in the city.
Right. So, but I mean, still 4.6 is pretty freaking good.
It's pretty good. Yeah. But, like, it's lower than I like it to be.
Yeah. So I'm sure that's bothering you. But in terms of, like, creating experience and what you do really well, I mean, the food, phenomenal. The physical space, gorgeous. You're being transported to Iran when you come here. Iran, sorry.
You're good.
Always Iranian, Iran. It's confusing sometimes. What are you doing to create that experience for the guests beyond, like, the physical, like, appearance and the delicious food?
Kind of everything needs to be right. Yeah. For me, when I look at the creating experiences, like, everything that guest touches, feels, and sees needs to feel like they've been transported. Whether from the moment you walk in, you walk through those ponds, right? You hear the sound of the water. You walk through the flowers. The valet service, from the moment they walk you up, they're going to ask your name. They're going to shake their hand. They're going to tell you their name. Like, they all want to create that relationship. It's like all of it comes together. It's not one piece of a puzzle. It's all like one big assembly of people working together to bring that experience for you. Whether it's that napkin you touch, the glass you touch, the cocktail that comes to your table, the plateware, the glassware, your bathroom experience. Yeah. What kind of bathroom are you walking into, right? What faucet are you watching? What door handle are you watching? Everything you see and feel needs to give you that. The music.
Have we broke for a sponsor for a second time?
No.
Okay, let's do that right now. We're going to come right back and we'll get further into that. This podcast is made possible by Restaurant Systems Pro, and we need to let you know that every second and fourth Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, CEO of Restaurant Systems Pro, Fred Langley, will be going live, where he'll cover what you need to know about running a profitable restaurant from soup to nuts. This live event will reveal the steps to manage the service and financial goals for your restaurant's productivity. Everyone who attends this live event will get a recording of the Restaurant Systems Pro 4-day How to Run a Profitable Restaurant from Soup to Nuts recording. This event costs $2,500 to attend live, and you'll get it for free. Head to go.restaurantsystemspro.net/restaurantunstoppable. That's go.restaurantsystemspro.net/restaurantunstoppable. This episode is brought to you by Restaurant Technologies, Inc. RTI's Total Oil Management automates your entire cooking oil process. With Total Oil Management, you get dependable fresh bulk cooking oil delivery, filtration plus oil usage monitoring and reporting, easy oil disposal, used cooking oil pickup and recycling, and say goodbye to those messy, dangerous restaurant rendering tanks. Yuck.
RTI's end-to-end cooking oil system helps you manage your used cooking oil disposal, storage, collection, and recycling conveniently, safely, and cleanly with no upfront cost. RTI's services are not limited to oil. They also provide insurance premiums and automated hood cleaning solutions, plus hood filtration systems, making your hood cleaning process easy, automatic, and worry-free. In addition to all this, Restaurant Technologies, Inc. can help you reduce your carbon footprint, which we all know is becoming increasingly more important to the consumer. Restaurant Technologies, Inc. is always on, so you don't have to be. To learn more, head to RTI-Inc.com and let them know Restaurant Unstoppable Podcast sent you their way. We're back. You're just diving into the experience that we're making. One thing that I want to talk about in terms of experience is, this was a huge lesson I got from, I always say this wrong. Kalaya. I'm sorry, I'm saying it wrong. If the folks in Philadelphia are hearing this episode, I apologize. Defined Hospitality Group. It's K-A-L-A-Y-A, but it's like, it's Thai, and like the way that the women say. Yeah. Dude, how would you say that?
Kalaya?
Kalaya is how she says it.
Oh, okay.
It always sounds so much better. But anyway, the lesson I learned there, Chef Nook, is that Thai food, and I feel like Iranian food is very similar to this, is meant to be eaten a certain way.
Correct.
So when a Caucasian or a European person comes in there, or you know, Chinese or whatever, and they this plate gets put in front of them, they're like, what do I do?
100%. And that's what brings us to the BB concept. It's like, right? Well, like, it has to be eaten a certain way for you to experience it fully.
Right. But in a fast casual, it's hard.
It's incredibly
hard. Because you don't have the opportunity to educate.
Correct. Yeah.
But here,
yeah.
What opportunities are you leveraging to really create like a table side experience?
Yeah.
Like, does your staff like, do they, so here's
my staff doesn't touch your food.
Okay.
But my staff tells you exactly how to eat it.
Okay. So here, I was just curious, like my experience at Kalaya. So what happened was I sat down. It was a prong meal with rice and all mm-hmm. this stuff. And the prong, everything was whole. And they actually, at tableside, broke down the prong, chopped it up, mixed it together, took all the elements because you have like some spices over here, some sauce over there, and like literally like put the show on.
That's awesome.
And I was like, holy shit, this is a whole experience. But yeah. I would have ordered that. I would have taken a bite of the hot sauce, blown my face off, right? And then like had some rice to put it out. And until you see it be done, it's almost like this opportunity to like educate and show. And like I would have never. But I mean, am I overextending here?
No, you're exactly right. So there's a lot Persian cuisine is kind of like that.
Yeah.
Everything has a meaning that is around you. Like on the table, whatever you see is supposed to be enjoyed at that moment. If it's not supposed to be enjoyed, it should be off your table.
But it's almost like showmanship. And it's
correct.
Like,
yeah.
Like it's a, you know, I just thought that was brilliant. I was wondering if you were taking advantage of that here.
We do something similar, but we don't really do a whole on show. Okay. The way we do it is like through actual speaking to the guests. Like every time we come up and drop a dish, we tell you exactly how you should eat it. We tell you exactly what to do with that sabzi plate, the fresh herb, the cheese, the walnuts, the bread.
Right.
Like I'll bring you a mushroom hummus. I'm going to tell you this is how you're going to eat it. You're going to mix up all the elements.
Yeah.
You're going to tear up that piece of bread and kind of dip it in there.
Got it.
Right? We're going to teach you like, we're like, okay, you want to order lamb. And so you probably know this, like everything on our menu is a la carte. Everything's separate. Yeah.
It's delicious.
Yeah. So we educate you. It's like, okay, you're going to order lamb. So this is the rice you should pair with it. And this is the sauce you should pair with it. Yeah. And this is how you should eat it. Now grab the stew, pour it over your rice instead of eating the stew as a soup, right? Mm-hmm. All those little elements of it.
Yeah.
Not as much interactive as you're explaining it. Slightly different way. Slightly more of a backseat approach of this is how we suggest you eat it, but you're still the master of your own show.
Yeah. And I think the other cool thing that you know, they say we're currently exiting the experience economy mm-hmm. and we're heading into the transformation economy. And I think what's cool with concepts like yours, where I think this necessary transformation that society has to have is this idea of just understanding other cultures better.
Yep.
And I think that you have the opportunity to transform the majority consumer in America.
Correct.
To understand and empathize in
You know, there's a lot of hate in the world.
Correct.
You know, and you have the opportunity to give a view into a culture that's not fully understood or maybe even hated.
Correct.
You know, so
no, it is. Yeah. In some parts of the world.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I hope that's not like a disrespectful thing to say.
No. Like that's how it is. So this is how it is. Like the best way to put it is like wherever in the world you're from, chances are your government might be doing something that you don't like, something right. your people don't approve of. And that becomes the news, right? People eat that and that's the only thing they understand about you. Right. Yeah. Like first time coming to this country, right? I was going to high school here. And my classmates were asking me, do you guys have cars in Iran or do you ride camels? So that kind of gives you an idea of like how much people are oblivious and ignorance of what goes on around them. And that's the opportunity we have here. We have the opportunity to improve their culture and make them understand our culture. Like about a week, right now we're in the Persian New Year time. Our first day of spring is our Persian New Year. We call it Nowruz. So as you walk in through a restaurant, you see a hafsin table, which symbolizes Persian New Year. Every element on that table symbolizes something you want in the New Year, whether it's a better health, or a more financial freedom, or spiritual wisdom, or like all those little things. Every element presents something. So this is kind of things that we experience. We educate our staff and to educate our guests with it, like through social media, through email posts, and there's specific dish that you need to have the first day of Persian New Year.
Right.
You need to start your Persian New Year with what we call Sabzi Polamahi, which is a herb rice and some sort of fish format. It's sometimes fried, sometimes grilled. And eating that dish, it brings up to like it's a green dish, so it brings up to the new year and freedom and has different meanings associated with it. So all those things is like helps us educate our guests to understand what you see in the headline of news doesn't mean anything. That's just what news wants you to see.
Well, yeah, and let's be honest. The news is controlled by people with a lot of money who want to control the narrative.
Correct.
They want to get a whole nation behind. I mean, I'm not saying what's happening in Iran. Is it Iran?
Anywhere. Iran, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Iran. Thank you very much. You're good. Feel free. I am also ignorant, so feel free to correct me. I'm not saying what's happening in Iran is in terms of the suppression of people and their free will to freedom of religion, correct. Freedom of whatever, like not supporting that. But at the same time, what's happening with the Iranian government isn't representative of everybody.
Correct.
Yeah. Which is why you're here.
Yeah. Just like every other country, like there are a lot of things your government does that you don't approve of.
Right.
And you have no power of changing them.
And there's a beautiful culture.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a representation of how beautiful the culture is. And I would have never known about this if I didn't sit down in Del Bar.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
I think that's the biggest chance we have. Our restaurants give us a podium.
You have transformed me, my friend.
Correct. Yeah. It allows you to kind of educate your clientele, educate your network, educate the people around you to make them understand what your culture is, where you're coming from.
Yeah. And we're more alike than we are different across the world.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that's 100%. Really important to know. Anything we haven't discussed today?
I think we did good.
Yeah, this has been
Should we keep it for next time?
Yeah. I mean, maybe we'll wait 5 years. We'll wait until you have 15 locations across the Southwest, or at least around Atlanta, if we're keeping it super central. I do want to ask, before we move on, something I'm trying to be better about, technology, tech stack. They say that to exist in the future, you have to learn how to do more with less.
Correct.
Meaning you have to lean more on automation and technology to execute with fewer resources, i.e. people.
Yeah.
What are you doing along that lines?
We rely on systems. Systems allow us to not have to focus on you're still focusing on every little detail, but allows you to make sure you're succeeding, right?
What technology are you leaning on?
We use a lot of different technologies. Like communication is the biggest part of when it comes to restaurants. Okay. So we use like Teams for communication.
You're
in a restaurant. Yeah. Yeah, Microsoft Teams. Okay. But a lot of our restaurants comes through like a point of sale system, Toast, back office, Restaurant 365, Checklist, Wisetail, Jolt. It's like all different
checklist
platforms.
Meaning, is that the name of the checklist you're using? Is it called Checklist?
Yeah. Checklist we're using called Jolt. And
we
transitioned to something called Wisetail, which is more of a educational platform for our restaurant, our groups. So every employee can log in. Every employee can be motivated through different ways. You can educate them on exactly what you need to educate them because there's so many things that are constantly changing in the field. this kind of works at that university that we talked about. Yeah. You do everything you can to become an institution.
Got it.
But it's through systems and grades or whatever it is.
Are you happy with Jolt?
Jolt is very glitchy. That's why I'm switching to something else.
What are you switching to?
I'm switching to Wisetail.
So Wisetail also does a checklist.
Wisetail also does checklists, but it is more elaborate. It gives you more than just checklists. It becomes that communication platform.
Training platform, really, right?
Training, communication. It becomes kind of everything all in one. And the beautiful thing about it, we can organize it in a way that it still feels like Delbar brand. You walk in there, you feel like you walk into Delbar.
Any other technology you've recently adopted that's just got you excited and you think is going to make an impact in your operation?
Nothing new like Ovation. We're still using Ovation. That's for feedback purposes.
How's that been for you?
It's been pretty cool.
What do you like about it?
What I like about it is I can get the experience that guest has without being in the space, right? I can interact with their experience all the time.
Give me an example of how that saved your ass.
A lot. It saved me develop BB to be so much better and faster and what it is. So, like, we put a sticker on every item. You scan the barcode, you can rate us. You can let us how good we did or how bad we did. And we can communicate with you on back end to save you.
So what happens
from losing you as a client?
So you scan the barcode. Mm-hmm. It goes to a pop-up screen where there's a bunch of faces from like pissed off, angry to like so delighted.
Yeah.
What happens if you are not like the super delighted, happy face, but like the next to that face that's like kind of happy, but like
sends me as an operator a notification that, hey, this guest was not super satisfied.
Yeah.
Figuring out what's going on with him. And I can start chatting with him.
Yeah.
I can be like, hey, what did you not like? What was wrong?
So you're getting feedback.
We get an instant feedback.
Before they ever get online, before they blow you up. And you can pay attention to that data. And if there's consistency in the feedback, then maybe something has to change.
Because a lot of times like this, a lot of times you have those clientele that comes to your restaurant and has specific dishes, right? Yeah. Like I'm one of those people. Like there are certain restaurants I go to, I don't look at a menu because I know exactly what I like and order exactly what I like.
Yeah.
And that person is a much more better critic than me or any chefs I have in the organization because they're constantly tasting that item.
Yeah. I think Ovation is my favorite marketing platform out there because it's not, I think the best way I'm all about four walls marketing. For me, it's four walls marketing, direct mail marketing. I think social media is a necessary evil, but if you do all the other stuff right, it takes care of itself.
Yeah.
If you want people to come back to your restaurant, then you don't need to tell them to.
Correct.
You know,
there's one more platform. There's one platform called Sunday that I recently came across.
Yes. Dude, I'm so happy. They reached out to me recently to be featured on the show. And I'm kind of a dick. I'm not going to lie. Because like, I don't like to promote companies that I haven't heard from people like you who can. I'm all about word of mouth. You know,
I like Sunday and different platforms, right? Sunday has good things, bad things.
Okay.
And I'm very open book with them because I talk to the partners of Sunday all the time.
Are they based here in Atlanta?
No, they're not based in Atlanta, but one of the partners lives in Atlanta.
Okay, that's what it is.
So that's how we got in touch with them.
Maybe
so we have
some time for me on Easter Sunday.
We have them at Delbar. I can connect you in text, actually. Please. I have Christy. I think it works great in some aspect, but it has flaws like everything else. Sunday is a platform that just like your QR code scanner that you pull up a menu. You can pay your tablet. The way it works great, I think, is helps a lot with the splitting checks. Anyone in the service industry knows how much servers hate splitting checks because they lose so much time, right? When a server have to split checks for a table of 8, 12, 14, it's 20 minutes out of their time that they're going to be working on that. And that 20 minutes that every other table is getting neglected.
Right.
Right? In a ideal world, you'd be like, oh, somebody else can assist with it, but that's not really how it works.
So you have Toast, right?
I have Toast.
Toast has the option to do a QR scan.
Correct.
But why not use that and buy Sunday?
I like Sunday for different ways. Sunday also, just like Ovation, allows me to control the guest feedback and see what their experience is like. Because at the end of dining experience, they can send me, they liked it, they didn't like it. And I can catch them before they leave the restaurant.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of times you can go to a table and talk to them like, how was the experience? Most of the time they say yes. It was great, right? But there's always something that bothers them.
Right.
They don't tell you in front of you.
So you're coming at them through Ovation. You're coming at them through Sunday. So all these points of contact to get feedback.
To control that. To control the quality. And all that feedback goes into our quality.
So with Sunday, when you print the receipt, you bring the receipt, there's a...
So there's no receipt involved.
So is it just right at the table?
It's just at the table. So like, they scan the QR code with their phone, and they can take care of payment in their phone.
Whenever they want to go.
Whenever they want to go.
So that tab is associated with that table. It's a unique correct. QR code to yeah. the table.
And if they're with their friends, they can figure out how they want to split the bill. Split it half and half. You pay for this item, I'll pay for that item. They can leave a tip right there, and they can go. Yeah. They can email themselves a receipt, so you don't have that like back office of, hey, somebody calling asking for a receipt.
Is there a reservation exists? In this space right
no,
now?
No, no, no. Okay. You're good.
I'm just making sure. I keep getting worried people keep coming up.
No, you're good. Sorry, and they leave you instant feedback. Right? And they can leave you instant feedback. And got we have in our iPads at the host stand, at the front desk of a restaurant, we have Sunday pulled up so we can see every feedback coming in. So if I see a bad feedback, I can catch the guests before they leave the I restaurant. Love that.
In terms of the QR code and how it's different, so I know Toast is on the receipt. They can, so you still have to wait for them to drop the receipt off before you can go. So the other benefit, it sounds like,
it's you can, quicker. You can yeah, get out.
If they have a movie they're trying to catch,
correct.
Deuces, I'm deuces. Out of here. Yeah,
and you don't have to wait for a guest for a server to bring the receipt.
Is that Miguel?
That's Miguel.
Miguel, get in here.
Get in here, Miguel. You're back, man.
We were just talking about you earlier, man. Bring it in. Don't be shy. You know I'm casual here.
How are you, man? You good?
We were just talking about Sunday. So Miguel from my from Real Tacos, business partners with Damian Otero, had him on. Where'd you go? Behind me. Actually, that's a perfect spot for you because you're on camera. We're just talking about Sunday. And I was going to ask you, in terms of the user experience beyond just being able to scan and go, is it easier to break up the check too?
It's much easier to break up a check. Okay. It saves them around 15, 20 minutes of awesome. Time in a restaurant, asking for a check, server getting a card, coming back. And a lot of people don't like to give their cards out, yeah. right? Because for fraud purposes and right. all that. So you're not leaving your card. It's synced up to your Apple Pay. You can pay instantly beautiful. In a matter of a second. The only downside is a small fee associated with it that could, if you're not upfront about it, the staff is not telling you upfront that there is a fee associated with it.
Pissed off.
Yeah, people is get it a percentage? Pissed off. It's like 1%.
Okay.
Yeah, 1 to 2%, yeah.
So is that like, can you put like signage like this is a 1%?
Correct, okay. yeah. So that part of it needs to be communicated. That's the only part that could result in like negative feedback and negative experience. But everything else, I think it works perfectly. It awesome. Speeds up the process.
Man, thank you so much. You. We got to wrap it up. I'm getting greedy with your time now. I'm just loving the conversation. Good, I'm just loving the conversation. You got a wedding to get to.
Yeah.
So before we say goodbye, how can we connect? What's the best way to connect with you?
You can connect with me through email. I think you have my email.
Yes.
Forrest@nushijohngroup.com or Forrest@dullbaratl.com.
Social handles?
Social handles. Forrest Cargard or has an Instagram. What is my Instagram? That is a very good. Dullbar ATL page is where I answer every one of your questions if you ever need to get in touch. And my personal handle on Instagram is Forrest Cargar.
Yeah.
My first and my last name together.
Forrest Cargar.
Yeah.
And who do you respect and admire? This is my North Star. Who's killing it right now? Who's making money? Who's got the culture? They're taking care of their people. They're going places. Who do I need to get on the show?
I mean, this guy right behind me, but you already got him on the show.
Yeah.
They're freaking killing it.
Yes. And this guy is Miguel Hernandez with Real Tacos, for the record.
Yeah, they're doing an amazing job. In the city, a couple of people inspire a lot. This is one of my friends called Nico.
Nico, and that's with the Buckhead Life.
Not that Nico.
Different Nico.
That Nico has been killing it for years. Yeah. That's the pioneer in the city. Right? That's a different Nico. But this Nico is one of a good friend of mine. He owns Bolivar Coffee, Cuban cafe restaurant, and recently opened Polanco.
Okay. Nico, look, I'm coming after you maybe on the next trip. And I know why I love Miguel, because he reminds me that I need to be better about social media. He's over here walking around, snapping shots. And I'm like, I didn't even do that with my own business. I'm doing something about it right now. So a little social media. Now's when I say, far as my man, there is no questioning. You are unstoppable.
Thanks, sir.
Cheers. There's another episode wrapped up here at Restaurant Unstoppable. Special thanks to our guest today, Fars Cargar, for coming on and letting me reconnect and go deeper
And this is really a great taste of the future of Restaurant Unstoppable. Fares Kargar is a past guest on the show. And the beautiful thing, the last time I had him on the show was 2 or 3 years ago, and a lot has happened for him in the 2 to 3 years. So now when I reconnect with him to be a guest on the show, we can go deeper into that 2 or 3 years and get granular on what's happened and what he's learned and what he's doing in his business. And we're building rapport. So this is a good taste of the future of Restaurant Unstoppable. And as I'm traveling across the country, I hope to filter in some of these past guests who I really enjoyed speaking with the first time around, and just picking up that conversation to grow these relationships and to pull these people into my network on a whole different level. And I want to bring you along with us. So if you have not yet joined Restaurant Unstoppable Network, you are missing out. You have this opportunity to connect with the people that I'm connecting with while I'm on the road. And that's really the vision of Restaurant Unstoppable. If we're going to transform the industry, we're going to do it by bridging the gap between this generation leaders and the next. And we want you to join that mission. So if you haven't yet, head over to the show notes. Email me, eric@restaurantunstoppable.com. Find out how you can get into the network to be a part of these conversations and to be a part of moving the industry forward. And thank you in advance for joining. And as you're listening to this, I am in Arizona. I had just arrived in Arizona. And this is also where I hope to start slowing down. So it has been kind of a chaos over the past couple weeks. 12 episodes, 15 states, 2 weeks. It was a lot. But now that I'm out west, the goal is to slow down and to go deeper and to really let word of mouth and past relationships steer the ship of Restaurant Unstoppable. So if you're in Arizona, or maybe if you're in Las Vegas or Southern California, reach out to me, because that's the path I'm taking next. And I'd love to connect with you. I can't say goodbye without saying thank you to the people who make the show possible. Thank you to Jared Parisi with Sumadre Podcast for your copyright editing and so much more. And thank you to our community manager, Callan Miola, for bringing it all together in the back end and connecting people and just killing it over at our Facebook group. That's it for today. Until next time, peace out.